Never seen the sky so blue. The birds are singing, I got nothing to do. Hey, hey,
hey, hey.
It's a sunny day.
Sunny day now.
My pocket's empty, my cupboard's bare. Call me illogical, I just don't care. Hey, hey,
hey, hey.
It's just a sunny day.
Hey, hey, hey. It's a sunny day.
It's just a sunny day.
The KSL Greenhouse. Information and great talk about your home, garden, and your lawn. If you love perennials, can't get enough help on landscape design, or just want to keep your lawn and vegetable garden pest-free, grab a pen. It's the KSL Greenhouse on KSL News Radio.
Good morning and welcome to the KSL Greenhouse. We appreciate you spending your Saturday morning with us. Maria Chaleos and Ton Bettis with you, taking your calls this morning at 801-575-8255. You can also text us at 57500. Good morning, Ton.
Good morning. How are you?
It's a beautiful day. I'm ready to get back out into the yard and do some work. We have Mother's Day this weekend, so a lot of people hopefully are getting together with their families, at least their close families, due to the social distancing. And we wanted to talk this morning about hybrid tea roses because they make such a fabulous gift for Mother's Day.
They do. They're relatively inexpensive, and you can get them from most local garden centers, plus a lot of the box stores still have a good selection. And there's just nothing so pretty sometimes as roses that will actually bloom on and off for the entire summer.
So what makes them a hybrid? What's different from a hybrid and a regular rose?
Well, there are dozens and dozens of rose species around the world, from North America, Europe, and Asia, that have been hybridized. They cross them, and they keep coming up with new kinds of roses. And so a hybrid tea rose has genetics from what's called a tea rose from China that was one of the only roses in the world that would repeat bloom. And they've taken these genetics and put them into the hybridization process and come up with all of these different kinds of roses that we enjoy today. And a lot of these roses may have genetics from three or four, or even sometimes five different species to come up with what we're growing in our yard.
Right. Are there some that do better here in our environment than others?
Yes, there are. There are some roses that are not cold hardy. There are some that are just really persnickety to grow. And so what we've got online is a list of 10 roses, and they're admittedly not necessarily brand new, but they're very usually durable and pretty roses, and ones that have been grown for a while and have a track record in northern Utah.
Right. Do you have a favorite?
Oh, man. On that list, I think the Peace Rose is my absolute favorite. And it's my favorite rose anyway. It has a history that's kind of neat that we can get into another time. But the Peace Rose, and then for some that aren't on the list, Mr. Lincoln and Chrysler Imperial and Rio Samba are three others that I really enjoy.
Okay, but now I'm curious about the history, so at least tell me a little bit.
No. Okay, yeah, I will. So the Peace Rose was developed in Europe in the late 1930s in France. And the Nazis were, during the Blitzkrieg, invading Europe. And the breeder of the Peace Rose sent stock to the United States and to, I believe, England, and then also maybe even into Canada, and to protect the variety. And so it barely made it out, and it turned out to be very popular. And at the end of World War II, at the armistice that was signed in Japan, all of the delegates that were there were given peace roses as a token of the end of the war, and that's how the rose got its name.
Oh, I love that. I'm glad you shared that history with us. And for those folks who may be thinking about buying a hybrid tea rose for their mom, you can go to the KSL Greenhouse Facebook page and you can see some of the 10, would you say, best varieties? 10.
Well, I'm not going to call them the best, but they are 10 varieties that do well.
Okay.
Along the Wasatch Front. There are so many roses that do well that, you know, I don't want to limit it to those 10, but if you've never dipped your toe into roses, there's care and things that needs to happen with them. But these are, this is a list that's been around for a while, and these roses will do fine along the Wasatch Front.
All right. We have our texters. They've been lining up since before the show began. I thought that was kind of interesting this morning. I even have a listener who called yesterday before I got off work with a question. So I'm going to ask that one first. This person planted a tricolored beech. The leaf buds this year are not opening, and they're wondering if they're just being overly anxious, or it's in clay soil. It's in Highland, Utah, on the east side of their house. Are they being overly anxious? Should these still bud
they
out?
They should be showing some signs of at least swelling to open if they haven't opened yet. What I would do is scratch the bark and with a knife or your fingernail on some of the younger limbs and see if the tissue's green underneath. Oftentimes there's energy stored in the branches, some energy to where most of it's in the roots, and those branches will start to swell and things, but if they don't start to get contributions from the roots, then the tree can decline. And so the first thing I would do is to scratch those branches to see if they're still green underneath the bark.
Okay. First texter saying, could you please tell us about the golden chain tree, the laburnum, I believe,
Vossii.
Help me.
Yeah, the golden chain tree is a very beautiful tree when it blooms. It has these long panicles, I guess, of yellow flowers. Mm-hmm. And it will bloom for 2 or 3 weeks. And then it just kind of turns into a small tree. And those flowers turn into seed heads that I prefer to cut off the tree because they can actually be quite unsightly.
Mm-hmm.
The tree seems to do okay here, but it's never long-lived. You don't see golden chain tree more than 15 or 20 years old.
Okay, so they were wondering, is it a good choice for Utah? What would you say it is or not?
Nah, as long as you're aware of what it does, it's fine. It is very beautiful, and then it just kind of fades off into the background.
Now, could it be grown in a large pot?
Theoretically, if the pot were big enough that the soil didn't freeze in the winter, yes. However, that's hard to do, and so it's not very practical.
Okay. Next texter is saying they need to move their daffodils and tulips to a new location. When would be the best time for them to transplant them?
When they die back in late June or July, they
can start
doing that.
So when that greenery dies back, right?
Yes. So when the flowers, when the leaves go yellow and brown, you can cut those back and then carefully lift the bulbs out of the ground. They may need to let them sit for a week or 10 days to kind of harden off, but they can be moved at that point.
All right. The next texter wondering if Roundup will volatilize in hot temperatures and the fumes travel 15 to 20 feet away and stunt corn plants.
Sounds like someone's had some experiences. Well,
Roundup,
It's not supposed to. Now, it could, as you're spraying, if you were spraying with a very fine mist and you have a wind that's 10 or 15 miles per hour, it could absolutely just drift in the wind and get over there. But otherwise, Roundup or glyphosate is not known to be very volatile in hot temperatures.
Okay, the number to call, 801-575-8255. When we come back, Paul and Amy, you're up next. You're listening to the KSL Greenhouse. You can also text us your questions at 57500.
A stranger with a gun came upon two teens taking pictures under a rising full moon. But violence is only the beginning of this story.
Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and I've spent my career talking about how lives are undone by violence. The Letter is a podcast about how lives are remade. Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Good morning. Thanks for joining us on this beautiful Saturday. Maria and Ton taking your calls, 801-575-8255. You can text us at 57500. Let's take our first caller this morning. Good morning, Paul. Paul's calling from Bountiful. What can we help you with?
Good morning. Yeah, I want to talk to you guys about mentioned a few weeks ago about plants that keep away dogs and cats. I wonder if there's a plant that keeps away deer. They ate my tulips, and I'm working on a vegetable garden, and I'm just concerned they may eat my food. Is there something that keeps deer away?
Well, I wanted to clarify on the dogs and cats. There are plants that the dogs and cats don't like to be around, but it's within a couple of feet. And so, I mean, there are plants that deer won't eat, but there aren't deer repellent plants.
Oh, hoping there was.
No, it's a real problem. What? Instead of tulips, I now plant daffodils in areas where I know there are deer because they won't eat those and they do well, or irises. And yeah, I wish there was a repellent.
Okay, I wonder. And what is the plant called? Is that the same plant that dogs and cats don't like, is daffodils?
No, it's usually, if you go to a garden center, a lot of times they're a type of scented geranium, and it'll just say some stuff like cat away or dog away. They've got several names depending on the brand that you look at, but if you go in, and again, don't expect miracles out of these, it's just that within a foot or two, you know, they'll stay away from that, but if there's just one in a big flower bed, that flower bed's still going to get cats in it if you've had problems.
One other question for you, too, is I'm mowing my grass here, and I noticed little bald spots of dirt where the grass is kind of missing, and it's a little bit soft. Does that indicate that I've got some type of animal living underneath my grass?
You'd have to open it up to see, and so I'm not really quite grasping what you're seeing.
Yeah, I'm just kind of seeing little bald spots that are no more than maybe 2 or 3 inches around.
Is there a hole in the middle of them, like almost like someone stuck a pencil?
Not that I noticed. I'll have to look. Just even a pencil hole, I'll have to look.
I don't know. I have noticed, though, Ton, in our grass this spring that it's kind of sparse. It almost looks like there are little sections like that. And that could that just be because it was a hard winter or something like that? Didn't get enough
water? It could be residual from snow mold. Sometimes people, especially if they live in wildland areas, have residual from vole damage, like the meadow voles. Then I've also actually been getting a lot of emails about necrotic ring spot. I don't think that's what the caller has, but necrotic ring spot starts out in little patches and then just kind of grows in rings and hook shapes and things. And so I'm hoping it's not that.
No, it's not that. Or it could be a vole. Voles do weird things.
Voles are animals, and they will overwinter under the snow and eat the crowns of the grass as they make tracks through it, and they'll nest in there. But as soon as the snow melts off, they retreat back to safer habitat because they don't like people and cats and dogs and things.
Okay. Well, I'll keep my eye out. I just don't know what these little patches are. I've got a few of them. I'm like, what in the world happened?
Well, hopefully they'll remedy themselves in the next few weeks as it gets a little warmer.
If you emailed some pictures to Sheridan Hansen, she's our horticulturist in Davis County and is quite astute at horticulture. She's actually hosted the show a few times, but Sheridan.Hansen@usu.edu. And email some pictures over to her, and she might be able to get you a little farther. So a lot of times with turf, a picture is just really helpful.
Okay, and it's Sarah.Hansen?
Sheridan, like in General Sheridan. Okay. Sheridan Hansen.
Sheridan. Gotcha.
All right, Paul.
And it's SheridanHansen.edu?
Sheridan.Hansen@usu.edu.
Oh, at USU. Okay, thank you very much.
Paul, thanks for your call this morning. Let's take a call from Amy in Salt Lake. Good morning, Amy.
Good morning. We have a lot of bumps in our grass, and some of the mounds have dirt on the top, and it's really uncomfortable to walk on. It started about 20 years ago and has spread to the whole backyard. Now, we have a large white oak tree in the back. I don't know if that has anything to do with it, but what could have caused this?
Well, it's probably frost heaving initially when the grass greens up, you go out and you're just like, holy cow, what happened? And as the water in the soil freezes, it expands and it causes a condition called frost heaving that will diminish as you turn on your sprinklers. Additionally, there are night crawlers and worms that can cause that, especially if they are in a soil that's very shallow and they can't go very deep. That's a lot of times that's compacted or heavy clay or overwatered soil. And then there's also been ground wasps that have been making about 2-inch wide mounds. And when they come out, there'll be a little hole in the middle of it. And we've had a lot of ground wasps emerge this year.
What did you say that was? Ground wasps?
Ground wasps.
Oh, okay. All right.
My poor grammar is because I went to school up in Clearfield.
No, no, no. Don't get started now. I don't want to get calls this morning.
I'm sorry.
So what can we do about it?
Well, it depends on what you have and why. And so there's not really just go get this product and your problems are solved. And so what I would do is do a soil test and maybe find out your soil texture. BYU and USU can do that. If you just Google USU Analytical Lab or BYU Analytical Lab, depending on what you know, where you live and what's closer, they can tell you the soil texture. How often are your sprinklers running during the summer?
About every other day.
For how long?
20 minutes or so.
Okay, and is your soil clay or sandy? Or?
Yeah, kind of more clay, but rather than trying to fix it, I wonder if we should put in some new sod, and, you know, if so, what type of good is that's kind of
an extreme measure, unless your sod's just really bad. Because Kentucky bluegrass and other cool season grasses, if they're maintained well, will easily last, you know, 40 or 50 years. They separate a bit and things, but, you know, replacing the sod isn't going to do you any good if the soil is compacted or if you have heavy clay that's causing this. And if you were to tear out the old grass, then what I would recommend doing is going and getting a lot of compost and putting about 2 inches down and incorporating or tilling that into the soil and then re-leveling it before you put seed or sod down again.
Amy,
if you wanted to go to that measure.
Thanks so much for your call this morning. We need to take a break for the bottom of the hour news. The number to call, 801-575-8255. You can text us at 57500. We'll be right back.